In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
We might hope that after November 3rd, whatever madness is going on in the United States will evaporate like a fog. But I also think we have to admit that's probably not going to happen.
It's a rigged election. It's the only way we're going to lose.
Are you suggesting that you might not accept the results of the election?
I have to say, no, I'm not going to just say yes. I'm not going to say no, and I didn't last time either.
If there's one thing that we've learned about Donald Trump after 4 years of his administration, it's that he's not likely to accept a result that doesn't favor him. And while Trump's approach might be the one that trends toward a dictatorship, it's not just his side that sees the other as illegitimate. America, as we've discussed before, is on the brink of something bad. We don't know what form it will take. We don't know just how bad it will be or how long it will last. But we do know that we can't escape the impact by sitting up here above the USA and pretending nothing's happening.
Well, I think we're certainly all hoping for a smooth transition or a clear result from the election, like many people are around the world. If it is less clear, there may be some disruptions, and we need to be ready for any outcomes.
So what is our own government doing to prepare for political chaos in America? What should they be doing? How much of an impact can we really have if we want to try to help our closest friend and neighbor weather whatever storm it's going to face? And more importantly, for our purposes anyway, what do various scenarios around the American election mean for life in Canada after it? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. This is The Big Story. Balkan Devlin is a senior fellow at the MacDonald Laurier Institute, and he is also a super forecaster for Good Judgment Incorporated, a geopolitical forecasting consultancy based in New York. Balkan, that is quite a title.
It's not something we gave to ourselves. It is basically what IARPA, United States Intelligence Advanced Research Projects Agency, had a competition, and then we end up having on the top of that, and then they start calling us that. So that's how we came about. And then they have a commercial spin-off, which is the Good Judgment Incorporated.
Well, I wondered when I was writing down your introduction if there was a story behind that term, and I'm so glad I asked. Why don't we start then with me just asking you, based on what you're seeing, how's it going in America right now with less than a month before the election? Better or worse than you would have predicted?
I think it is going like a lot of people start to see, at least, say, April, May, not even before, that a political storm is coming up. And you know, it's watching a train wreck in slow motion, I think. And a lot of focus has been on the contested nature, most likely, of the election results. And the Trump administration has been making the case from day one that, you know, this will be a rigged election, all that kind of thing, because of the mail-in votes, and makes it quite clear that they will contest the results if they don't like what is coming out there. And with the, you know, coronavirus pandemic going on and all the deadlock in the Congress and elsewhere, I think the passions are running high. Of course, there is a chance that these would sort of die out, and a huge sort of blowout, landslide victory for Biden, and everyone is basically conceding. But I see that very, very low probability on the Republican side accepting such a concern. That's why I believe we should really steel ourselves into a political turmoil that could last several months.
When you say a political storm is coming, it's a colorful phrase. What does that look like to you?
It could take different shapes. A lot of focus has been on the media and elsewhere on whether this will be a contested election, whether it will end up in the court, would it go to Supreme Court, would there be different electoral college or electorals in essence selected by the states by rival groups, all that kind of thing, and that is one concern. This will drag out. That we will not know the results of the election after, say, several weeks or into early December. And that's one way things can go wrong. But there are other ways in which things can go wrong. And mm-hmm. I think those deserve the same level of attention. And I call one of them as the chaotic transition and the other one as the delegitimized presidency.
So start with the chaotic transition then.
Sure. So I believe, when you look at sort of the polling numbers, the betting markets, we also, in good judgment, have been forecasting the election results. I think sort of the consensus opinion there, or the average opinion there, is about 78% for Biden and about 22% for Trump. So there is, high likelihood that Biden would win. And there is also a possibility, perhaps around 5%, 5 to 7%, that it will be a landslide win, that it is so overwhelming that the contestation will not or could not last long. But that will not stop an outgoing Trump administration to make it extremely hard and problematic for the incoming Biden administration to get a handle on things. So what I mean by chaotic transition is that process until January 20th, the Trump administration basically wreaking havoc, issuing pardons left and right, might engage in foreign adventures to distract and create a lot of problems for the incoming Biden administration, ways in which they could try to ram through executive actions. If they end up losing the Senate before the new senators manage to sit, ramming through other legislation and all that kind of stuff, basically a last-ditch attempt to both create immunity, if possible, for some of the administration personnel, including Trump and his family, but also trying to create so many fires that when the Biden administration come, they will have to put a lot of things and would have limited bandwidth to go after the Trump administration.
Right.
And I'm really concerned about the foreign adventures component as well. And this is partly the spite issue. It's very hard for me to envision Trump having a very calm, orderly transition after losing that way. And we all know that he hates to be a loser.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
That's I'm very concerned about too. So he can lash out left and right, and that's a major concern.
And what about the third scenario?
The third scenario, when you look at the numbers again, people think, yes, Biden would win, but even the polling numbers would have 20 to 25%, quite a legitimate way of Trump winning the Electoral College and be the president. But given the polarized nature of American politics today, I would find it extremely unlikely that the majority of Democrats, and particularly a very vocal, more left-wing of the party, would accept that result as legitimate. They already do not perceive Trump as a legitimate president. And, we had all those marches and whatnot when he was first elected. And imagine those, but 10 times more. And, with the pandemic, with the whole pent-up, sort of frustration, with the Black Lives Matter protests, all of this coming, and there was this, at least for the Democrats, there is this ray of hope that in November things would change and Trump administration would go. And if that hope is also crashed, I would not, I cannot imagine that people would go like, okay, well, 4 more years, fine.
Right.
So they would go on mass protests and outside. And Trump would react quite harshly as an attempt to see that as an attempt to sort of steal the presidency from him. and might engage with the military, you know, invoke Insurrection Act, et cetera, et cetera. Can you imagine 100, 150 cities having mass demonstrations and sending Homeland Security people there, you know, federal troops, National Guard, and a continuous, you know, days and days and days of riots and protests, and a significant portion of the public not accepting Trump as a legitimate president, and he'll be there for 4 more years. There might be another impeachment process and all that kind of thing. So it's very, very problematic. There are multiple ways to chaos, and only a very narrow road for things to work out perfectly well, and that won't be much of a distraction.
And the reason we're talking to you about it is because after you laid out these three scenarios, you began looking at what the impact on Canada would be and how we can prepare for it. So, I mean, I guess my first question is, do we know if or what our government is doing right now to prepare for these kind of scenarios, which I have to imagine even 5 years ago wouldn't have been something they would comprehend regarding America?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the very fact that we have to, you know, talk about even, for example, a couple percent possibility of, different law enforcement agencies choosing different sides with competing claims to presidency is crazy. You know, if you think about
right.
it. Well, I'm not privy to what the government is doing, but I believe, and that's the responsible thing to do, that they must be thinking about it and at least running a certain set of scenarios to see where the major vulnerabilities are, where they need to be focusing on. The problem is that we are also going through a pandemic, an economic downturn, a minority government.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much the top policymakers have bandwidth to pay attention to, and my fear is that they were just hoping for the best. Biden would get elected. There might be a few weeks of contestation, but then everyone would concede and we will move on. Let's, you know, cross our fingers and hope for that. And that's not a strategy. You know, hope is not a strategy. And I hope, again, you know, part of it is that even if you are preparing for it, you don't necessarily want to make that public. You don't want to go, publicly right. and say, well, you know, our biggest trading partner and neighbor down there, they might go, down south quite badly. So we're preparing for it. That's not politically astute to do so. But I'm hoping that they are preparing for it. In terms of affecting what is going on there, we don't have much leverage in American domestic politics.
Right.
All we can do is brace for impact. And one way of doing it is to game out and do a lot of scenarios and simulations to see what is going on. Because there are multiple levels of concerns there. Provincial concerns, municipal concerns, border, economic issues, more security, broadly security related issues. So you need to be able to deal with at different levels, depending on which level of government we are talking about. Identify what are the vulnerabilities, to what extent you can have insurance against this chaos coming up, and figure out which policy responses would be reasonable. And there are shops within the government, from Police Horizons to the in-house shops in DND and GAC and other places that engages in such scenario planning activities. So that's one way to do we should be doing, and we should also be reaching out to other allies, discreetly, for sure, but to talk with the Brits, to talk with the Germans and others.
Do you think they're as concerned as we need to be right now?
We are. We probably should be concerned more, given where we are located.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm pretty sure they are concerned. I mean, they saw what a 4 year of lack of American sort of leadership and a president that is not interested in maintaining alliances look like. Despite whatever they think about American government or Trump administration, what is worse than that is a complete chaos within the United States. You don't want your major ally to be in such a state. So I think they should be concerned. And if they're not, maybe we should prod them and say, you know, you guys, maybe you should be paying attention.
One of the things you mentioned is that Canada should be, you know, war gaming out these scenarios and planning for what could happen. I totally understand the concept of war games for, you know, military exercises or big geopolitical shifts. But what would it actually look like to plan for one of those scenarios on the ground if you're in that planning group in government? What are you actually doing?
War games, maybe just to take a little step back, could have different levels. So you can have a tactical operational level gaming that looks at the nuts and bolts. Say, you know, okay, we are going to do something with the border. Let's bring in people, you know, municipalities and mayors of cities at the border. Let's bring in the relevant federal agencies and the provincial agencies and give them a scenario, say that this X happened. There is a contestation. There is a surge in illegal crossings and a disruption of trade because, you know, X, Y, and Z. How do we do? What do we do? And then you assign people to different roles. You assign people to, say, play the refugees or play, you know, American officials that want to, say, you know, block the border, you know, and other things. And then you try to figure out. Most of these games have a limited set of rules. The idea is the idea generation. The idea is to make it open so that people can try to think ways of seeing stuff that they didn't think before, right? At the strategic level, you can have a bigger game and talk about a scenario in which, for example, there are competing claims to the presidency. And so what would our liaisons in NORAD should do? How we should do the military-to-military contact? You have two incoming different orders from two presidents-elect. What do you do? How do you respond? How would GAC respond? Who would we recognize as the legitimate president? What should be the principles and the criteria we will be setting in? How should we reach out? And you do that by playing these various roles with a lot of input and try to figure out how things could unfold and see whether all of your scenarios end in a bad way, or whether there are ways in which you can minimize the impact and try to get out of this with as little damage as possible.
If you're going to do that at a very high level, or you're going to do a lot of them, as I'm imagining you need to do because there are a ton of scenarios here to play with, what happens if the word on that gets out? You kind of touched on it earlier that you probably don't want to send the message that we're like planning for Trump to seize power or any of these other scenarios? And can you involve that many people without this becoming public knowledge?
Well, that's, of course, that's a bit tricky, but there are ways in which you could, you know, camouflage it, let me put it that way. It doesn't have to be, I mean, a lot of the wargaming things are done with, in some cases, fictional scenarios, in some cases, real scenarios. So you could actually have, first you can have classified games naturally, and especially if you're doing it at the higher level, you wouldn't need, you know, these are not mega games where you have 20, 30, 40 people. You can, you know, have small games repeated a lot with 5, 6, or 7 players. And that's, you know, as a small enough group to prevent leaks if need be. And that can be done. And you don't need to have, you know, 25 of them. You can have 5 or 6 high-level games with a very select number of people in a confidential setting. And that will give you the, you know, broader outlines of what you want to do. But another way is, as I said, is to camouflage it with something else. For example, Pentagon did and continue to do games about a zombie outbreak in the United States, for example. Well, one of the reasons is not because, you know, zombies would suddenly come up, but it is a very good stand-in for any kind of domestic disturbance, civil unrest, and relevant things. By law, Pentagon is not supposed to, the military is not supposed to engage in domestic, enforcement action and whatnot. But you know, if we are talking about zombies, we're talking about fiction,
right?
So we could do that.
That's fascinating.
So here in Canada too, I mean, there is a very active, lively wargaming community. Rex Brynan from McGill University is one of the sort of leading experts on this, and he ran several mega games called Apocalypse North, for example, is one of them, and that included several people from Public Safety Canada and other places. You know, zombie outbreak in the United States. They tried to cross the border. What do we do? That's a stand-in for a lot of things. And playing those out give a lot of useful analytical information on what are your vulnerabilities are, how the politics of crisis management works, different levels of government in terms of communication, this and that, and so on and so forth. So those are very, very useful things that are being done in Canada in different formats. And there is, in that sense, a reservoir of talent and experience in that. And then we should be perhaps using it.
You touched on it a little bit earlier, but can you give me a sense of how vulnerable Canada is in these scenarios? Like, how badly could this kind of chaos in the U.S. impact us?
Well, I think there is quite a clear understanding that it will have an impact. You don't want, your biggest partner to be in turmoil.
Yes.
And the effect, I would argue, would depend on the level and the duration of the instability, right? So if we're at the very high level of instability with competing presidential inaugurations, we're in a very bad, very bad place. We really need to, think very broadly about how to protect the border and all that kind of thing at that stage. If it ends up a few weeks of contestation, And perhaps a limited chaotic transition because Biden victory is so large, and that everybody is basically jumping ship and deserting Trump administration, so his ability to wreak havoc is limited. Then we could ride it out more comfortably. One of the reasons why I pushed for gaming and reaching out to others is that we don't know which way things would go. And the thing is, the probabilities themselves are not sufficient to guide the policy. We should be concerned about the impact. Yes, there is a very small probability that we would have competing inaugurations and different law enforcement agencies taking different sides, maybe a percent or two. But the impact of that will be huge for Canada. You basically have a country that is at the brink of a civil war. Something we could not even imagine just a few years in the past. So we need to look at both the probability of things happening, but also the impact of things happening. And things can get pretty bad. In the best case scenario, we would have to sit a little nervously and hope that the contestation would be short and the Trump administration would concede and then that he would not wreak too much havoc in the transition. And that's our best case scenario. So we should think about that. And we should also see what we can do to go forward if things get progressively worse over a period of 6 to 9 months. And how are we going to deal with that?
The last thing I want to ask you about is, I guess probably the biggest piece on our chessboard, at least, is Prime Minister Trudeau. And, he's a very visible global figure. Certainly he can lead the conversation in different ways. What do you do with him? Is there any way he could really help or really hurt our role in these things? Like, how do you wargame out the Prime Minister?
Very good question. As I said in the piece for the McDonald Laurier, I think the biggest challenge would be to resist the temptation to pontificate. And Trudeau has a tendency to make large moral grandstandings. And that would be risky. But I'm hopeful I'm hopeful in the sense that looking at how Justin Trudeau handled Trump in the first couple of years of that relationship suggests that he could rein in that temptation to lecture others and have a very sort of a grand moral standing position. So I think the very fact that, you know, he so far didn't really make any public comments on what is going on and how things would go is a good signal. But the biggest risk would be is the push when there is a contested election and suddenly and prematurely Trudeau would go, yes, we recognize Biden and we support him and we hope this and that, and things turn out not that way. And then sort of our guy loses the competition. That will be the biggest, I would say, challenge to do so. It's a very fine line. You know, he will be in a very tight spot to walk a very fine line to remain, you know, cautious and prudent without necessarily committing Canada to one side of this contestation when it comes. Because we basically don't have much leverage to affect things. We would need to live with whoever is the winner, whoever comes on top of this. We might have our preferences, but that's not a reason enough to be able to choose side early. And that's, I think, is the biggest issue. But given his dealings with Trump before, I think Justin Trudeau could rein in his own instinct of moral standing and virtue signaling.
Balkan, thank you so much for walking us through this. I honestly hope that it's all useless, but I suspect that it will not be. So thank you very much.
You're welcome. I really enjoy this chat, and I really hope that in this case, my forecast turns out to be wrong.
Balkan Devlin, a senior fellow at McDonald Laurier Institute and a super forecaster, though we both hope he's wrong. That was The Big Story. For more, head to thebigstorypodcast.ca. Find us on Twitter at TheBigStoryFPN. Write to us with your war games for the American election at TheBigStoryPodcast@rci.rogers.ca. Head to your favorite podcast player, hit subscribe, hit rate, hit review, leave us a good one. Claire Brassard, Stephanie Phillips, and Ryan Clark produce this show. Annalisa Nielsen handles everything else behind the curtain. Jennifer Gay is our audience lead. She's answering your emails. She's reading your tweets. I'm peeking over her shoulder because I can't help myself. And that's the team. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. Thanks for listening. Have a great Thanksgiving weekend, as great as it can be when you stay in your home and don't go out and spread COVID-19. If I can't go out, neither can you. You don't get to have fun if I can't. We'll talk Tuesday.